I'm in the process of building a completing the construction of a LEED certified home, my home, in Mount Kisco, New York. And the other day, I hooked up the solar. We have two solar. We have solar panels, solar thermal on the roof. And I had the pleasure of hooking it up and then watching my meters spin backwards. And and that was just it's a clear testament of what David just said. Thank you very much. Which is that this is not just a moral obligation, but it's an economic benefit to all of us. My solar investment will take about 3 years to pay back, and after that, it's money in the bank for me and my wife and my family. There's a larger concept here, which is that. We're not protecting the environment so much for the sake of the fishes and the birds. We're protecting it for our own sake, because we recognize that nature is the infrastructure of our communities, and that if we want to meet our obligation as a generation, as a civilization, as a nation, which is to create communities for our children that provide them with the same opportunities for dignity and enrichment and prosperity and good health as the communities that our parents gave us, we've got to start by protecting our environmental infrastructure, the air we breathe, the water we drink, the wildlife, the fisheries, the public lands, the shared resources of our communities, the landscapes and rivers that connect us to our past, to our history, that provide context to our communities, and that are the source ultimately of our values and our virtues and our character as a people. Lord David Putnam gave a speech before Parliament last November, when Parliament was debating a cap-and-trade system, very much like Matt Waxman-Markey, the one that President Obama is now pushing after healthcare. I met with the president last week and with Rahm Emanuel, and that as soon as we get a healthcare bill, this is their first priority, is to recreate the energy structure of our country. And the first thing they're going to do is try to put a cost on carbon. And they had a very similar bill that was passed in November by Parliament, to its credit, ultimately. But during the debate, and everybody in England understands that global warming is a grim reality and that government has to take a strong hand in dealing with it. And they have, you know, housing standards there that encourage these type of developments. But but there's still people in England, vested interest in others, who say, you know, we can't move so precipitously. We have to move incrementally. We have to move slowly, because if we move too quickly, that it will cause grave dislocations in the marketplace, and that's going to hurt our country over the long run. And Lord Putnam reminded Parliament that exactly 200 years before, the same body had debated the abolition of the slave trade. And at that point, everybody in England believed that slavery was a moral catastrophe for Great Britain. It was an abomination, and it had to be abolished. The only question is, how do you do it, and how quickly? And you know, at that time, slavery represented 25% of the GNP of England, and it was the principal source of energy for the entire British Empire, free human labor. And they said, if we abolish it overnight, that the economy is going to collapse. But after a year of debate, Parliament made the moral choice and abolish slavery outright. And instead of collapsing, the British economy exploded as thousands of entrepreneurs rushed into that space to create new forms of energy, mainly mechanical ones, in an era that we now know as the Industrial Revolution, which was the greatest epic in wealth creation in the history of mankind. And the abolition of the slave trade had exposed all of these hidden inefficiencies that were associated with free human bondage. Well, today, we don't need to abolish carbon to understand that our deadly addiction to it is the principal drag on American capitalism and quality of life in our country. We are borrowing $1 billion a day, mainly from nations that don't like us and don't share our values, in order to import $1 billion of oil a day from nations that don't like us and don't share our values. And that export of $750 billion in American wealth, three-quarters of $1 trillion every year, has beggared a nation that when I was a little boy owned half the wealth on the face of the earth. You know, and, you know, this is where Kentucky is a coal state. But look at the cost of coal to our country and to the people of this state. I spend a lot of time in eastern Kentucky, and I see these communities that are destroyed by it. The New York Times had an article about Charleston, West Virginia, which is another, you know, this week, that the children in Charleston, that all of them are drinking water that is poisoning them and destroying their brains. That all the children in Charleston, because the coal industry has leaked through their slurry ponds, that the toxins that are so strong and they are neurotoxic and cancer-causing, carcinogenic, and they're just, but they're, it's so strong that it has destroyed the enamel on the teeth of almost all the children in Charleston. Imagine that we're poisoning our children for this. That's just one of the costs. 2 weeks ago, the New York Times reported that every fish in the United States of America now is contaminated with dangerous levels of mercury. That's another cost of coal. We're cutting down the Appalachian Mountains. We're destroying the, you know, through acid rain, the forest cover on the high peaks of the Appalachians from Georgia to northern Quebec. One of the reasons we can't have a high-speed rail in this country is because the coal gondolas are so heavy they've warped the train tracks across the country. You know, I won a lawsuit in West Virginia last year. I was 6.5 week lawsuit, and when I was I just argued the appeal a couple of weeks ago while I was leaving the state. I was driving on a federal highway, and it felt like I was driving on a carpet. And I said to the driver, you know, why is this highway so great? And he said, because there's 22 inches of asphalt on it. Well, the Massachusetts Turnpike is 4 inches, and they need 22 inches for the coal trucks. But the coal industry's not paying for it. You and I are, the federal taxpayer. And these are all part of the costs of burning coal. Now, we know, you know, I flew over the Appalachians. My father was in, you know, Neon, Kentucky, and up through eastern Kentucky in the 1968 campaign that you were talking about. And I remember a conversation I had with him when I was 14 years old, where he said to me, they're not just destroying the environment, they're permanently impoverishing these communities. He was fighting strip mining in Appalachia back then, and when it was tiny. When I flew out this week, I flew over the Cumberland. I saw something, if the American people could see it, there'd be a revolution in this country. We are cutting down the Appalachian Mountains, these historic landscapes where Daniel Boone and Davy Crockett roam, that are the source of America's culture and value. And, you know, we're cutting them down with these giant machines called drag lines that are 22 stories high. They cost $500 million and practically dispense with the need for human labor, which indeed is the point. My father said when he had this conversation with me when I was 14 years old, he said they're doing it so they can break the unions, and that's exactly what they did. When he told me that in 1968, there were 146,000 unionized mine workers in West Virginia taking coal out of tunnels in the ground. Today, there are fewer than 11,000 left. Only half of them are unionized. They're taking more coal out of West Virginia than they were in 1968. But today, you know, back then at least some of that money was being left in the state for salaries and pensions and reinvestment in the community. Today, it virtually goes all straight up to Wall Street, to the big banking houses like Bank of America and Citibank and Peabody Coal and Arch Coal and Massey Coal, you know, to their corporate headquarters. Not to the people of the state. There was a study just done about West Virginia that said that the cost of coal to the state, the net cost, it doesn't bring a profit to the state. It's a net cost of $156 million a year. So it's not bringing prosperity, although that's what the big shots argue. And, you know, they're exploding today in West Virginia an amount of 2,500 tons of ammonia nitrate explosives every day. It's a Hiroshima bomb once a week. They're blowing the tops off the mountains to get at the coal seams beneath, and they plow, used with these big machines, the rocks and rubble into the adjacent river valley and bury the valleys. They buried 2,000 miles of America's rivers and streams. They've cut down, within 6 years, they'll have flattened an area the size of Delaware. They've already cut down the 500 biggest mountains in West Virginia. You imagine that. And, you know, you look at every country that has decarbonized their society, and without exception, they have experienced instantaneous prosperity. In Denmark in 1970 was the poorest country in Europe. It was 100% dependent on imported coal and oil. They made a decision to get rid of it all. Within 15 years, they had done so, and they went from the poorest country in Europe to the fourth richest country by GDP on Earth. Sweden, in 1996, decarbonized, decided to decarbonize its society and shut down its nuke plants. It slapped a $150 ton tax on carbon, and thousands of entrepreneurs rushed into that space to create new forms of energy, from wind, from tidal, from solar, from geothermal, from sawmill waste and putrid garbage. And today, Sweden is the sixth richest country in the world. Its energy use has gone down by 9%. Its economy has grown by 45%. Brazil, 20 years ago, decided to decarbonize its transportation system. And today, Brazil, as a result of that decision, while the whole rest of the world economy collapses, Brazil is enjoying the longest, most robust economic expansion in the history of Latin America. Costa Rica decarbonized its electric grid, and because of that today, it's by far the wealthiest country in Central America. And you can go on and on with these examples. But we have the ability, and we have much greater geothermal resources here than they have in Iceland. We have the best solar in the world. Scientific American just published a report that said in an area 75 miles by 75 miles of the desert southwest, the most barren desert land, if we put solar thermal plants there, we can power 100% of our country from that. I'm building a solar plant now in my company, BrightSource, 2.6 gigawatts of power. It's bigger than any coal plant, any nuke plant in this country, and we're building it cheaper than you can build a coal plant and less than half of what you'd pay for a nuke plant. Once you build it, the energy is free forever. The sun is hitting the earth every day. All you have to do is pick up the photons and put them into the lines as electrons. Once you build a $3 billion gigawatt coal plant, now your big costs are just starting, because now you've got to cut down the Appalachians, flatten eastern Kentucky, ship it across the country in rail yards, poison every fish in America, cause 60,000 deaths a year from ozone and particulates, 1 million asthma attacks, 1 million lost work days. And those are the big costs that are hidden from us all. But the cheapest place to get, we have the best wind in the world. The Midwest of our country, the Saudi Arabia of wind. North Dakota is the windiest place on earth at sea level. Every farmer in North Dakota wants to put wind turbines on their land. And Obama's new plan is going to do this. It's going to allow what we need is a national grid system that can carry all these new forms of energy. That's the problem. We don't have, T. Boone Pickens, General Electric, Siemens, Vestas, the biggest companies in America all want to put turbines on every farm in North Dakota and restore those rural economies and on the mountaintops here where people want them and in the windy places. The problem is we don't have the power lines that can carry that energy. Our power grid is incapable of doing long-haul transport of energy. So the North Dakota farmer can't sell his his electrons in St. Louis or New Orleans or New York City because he simply can't get them there. They diffuse before they cross the North Dakota line. And one of the things that Obama has promised to do is a national effort to create a national grid. But in addition to that, half the energy we use in this country, the cheapest energy, although I'm creating cheap energy with wind and solar, the cheapest energy we can create is through conservation, in places like this, by building new housing and new buildings and new factories that are energy efficient, that take, my house it's in the same footprint as my old house, but it's 20% of the energy that my old house is using. So we can do that all over the country. We can save half the energy through investments in this rather than buying Saudi oil. When you build this, you're doing something that is as patriotic as it gets. It gives us national security. It gives us independence. It makes it so we don't have to deal with these Arab sheikhs who despise democracy or hated by their own people and who we should have nothing to do with. Instead, we're creating jobs at home. And I'll tell you something, this investment that Obama's going to make in a national energy grid where, we're going to harness the wind and solar and we're going to put wires across the country and we're going to employ millions of men and women building the pylons to string the wires across America, building wind turbines and erecting them on every farm in the Midwest, building solar thermal plants, affixing solar voltaics to every house in America, every rooftop in America, hiring men and women in teams to go into every neighborhood and pressure test the houses to see where the leaks are and where the, and then going in and spraying the insulation and rebuilding the, this kind of stuff, you know, and employing people in the process. And then in the end, you have free energy forever. Free energy forever.